he seems to save his best play for last. In Matthew chapter 4, starting at verse 8, it said, "Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, 'All these I will give you if you fall down and worship me.' Then Jesus said to him, 'Begone, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only you shall serve.'" Why did Satan save this temptation in particular for last? One of the reasons is because the nations, the kingdoms of the world, are exactly what Jesus came for. He wanted the nations. He desired them. That's part of the definition of a temptation. You have to want the thing being offered at some level. And here the devil is offering something that Jesus very much desires. The nations of the world, kingship, honor, glory, but with a shortcut, a presumption. Here, the devil hopes would be another Adam eating of another forbidden fruit, another fall. Jesus would be king with no suffering, no road through the cross, and no obedience to the Father. But Jesus would not accept the nations as a gift from Satan. He would lay claim to them on the field of battle. He would only accept them by right of conquest, as a boon from his Father. Psalm 2 is one of my favorite psalms. It states things the way they are. It doesn't apologize for it. It doesn't tiptoe around the meaning. It doesn't try to spare anyone's feelings about the way of the world. It shows how God views the pretensions of mankind and then what mankind can do about it. Let's read Psalm 2 and keep in mind the particular temptation of Jesus. "Why do the nations rage and the peoples plot vain? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, 'Let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us.' He who sits in the heavens laughs. The Lord holds them in derision. Then he will speak to them in his wrath and terrify them in his fury, saying, 'As for me, I have set my king on Zion, my holy hill. I will tell the decree. The Lord said to me, "You are my son. Today I have begotten you. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your heritage, and the ends of the earth your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Now therefore, O kings, be wise. Be warned, O rulers of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry, and you perish in the way, for his wrath is quickly kindled. Blessed are all who take refuge in him." Kings and rulers chafe under the rule of the Lord and want to be free of his influence. They want to be their own gods. And this is a problem since the beginning of time, and it's still a problem today. Our current governments and their schools, they think they enforce God out of their public square. They think they have cast away their bonds and their cords. They pretend some kind of neutrality. But really, there is no neutrality, not when it comes to God. And what they're really doing is raging against the Creator of heaven and earth. But in this scenario, in this psalm, God doesn't beg for people to accept him. He laughs. And he says, "Kiss the Son. Bow down to my King." There's no room for neutrality there. God doesn't care about philosophical arguments of whether he exists or not. He says, "Kiss the Son, lest he be angry, and you perish. You live or you die." There's no neutrality there either. The Lord turns to his Son, his anointed. "Ask of me," he says, "just ask, and all the kingdoms of the earth will be yours." And Jesus has asked for them. we see a picture of all the kings of the earth, no longer raging, no longer plotting, but streaming into this new city of God. They walk by its light, and they bring the glory of the nations with them. They bring it in homage to their king. Ephesians chapter 1, starting at verse 20, says that God raised Jesus from the dead and seated him at his right hand in the heavenly places, far above all rule and authority and power and dominion and above every name that is named, not only in this age, but also in the one to come. And Jesus himself says in Matthew chapter 28, verse 18, all authority on heaven and on earth has been given to me. He has asked, and he has received. He received exactly what he came for. He accomplished exactly what he came to do. The nations are his. The ends of the earth are his possession. Whether they know it or not, whether they assent to the fact, they are under the authority of the King of Kings. You are under the authority of the King of Kings. And you don't want to make this king angry. The Jesus of Psalm 2 is a far cry from the Jesus of popular culture. And sometimes the Jesus even we think about, we like to entertain. We like a meek and a mild Jesus. A soft-spoken Jesus. Perhaps even a pacifist Jesus. A Jesus who would almost be embarrassed by overturning the tables of money changers and driving them out with a whip. A Jesus who would never hurl insults at the Pharisees. A Jesus who looks like he needs a few extra meals. If he didn't hold on to something, a breeze would blow him away. We like the idea, inherently, of Jesus, the gentle Lamb of God. But we tend to ignore he's also the Lion of Judah, for whom the scepter would never depart. We can forget also that he is the fearsome general riding on the white horse, striking down the nations with the sword of his mouth, the possessor of the keys of death and Hades. There is a scene in the book, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, by C.S. Lewis, where Susan, one of the characters, asks if Aslan, the great lion and the king, is safe to be around. And another character answers, safe. Who said anything about safe? Of course he isn't safe. But he's good. He is good. For Jesus the King does exactly what the psalm says he does. He breaks, he dashes to pieces, but only so he might put together again in his own image. He wages war, he kills, but only so he might bring about resurrection. And not before he himself traveled the same road. So tonight, bow down before the King. Confess your allegiance. Kiss the Son. Take refuge in his promised grace. Because blessed are all who do so. You'll find that once you do, his burden is light. And this fearsome king, this warrior, is now on your side. You can rejoice. And everyone here will rejoice with you. For there are two main ways God gets rid of his enemies. Two main ways he conquers his foes. The first is the obvious, the straightforward. He just obliterates them. He leads them to ruin. But the second way reveals his glory and power all the more. When he turns his enemies